Red on Red.
This week in the podcast, we're joined by Oisín Dunín, songwriter and frontman of Cork psych rockers Annie Joy.
We'll be right back.
Altered Hours with On My Tongue, taken from their EP of the same name, and Laurie Shaw with Chaos Kisses. This is Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast, dropping every Wednesday evening via Cork's Red FM and redextra.ie. We're also available on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and other podcasting platforms. My name is Mike McGrath-Bryan, and this week we're joined in studio by Annie Joy, frontman, songwriter, and CEO, Oisín Dineen. Oisín, how are you doing, boss?
Good, how are you, Mike?
Can't complain at all now. You've had a busy time of it lately. A new single of yours just released via a live session video recorded at the Bubble Rooms as of recent, released via your social media last week, I think it was?
Yep.
How have you found the reaction to it?
Good. Yeah, it was different for us. It's the first time we kind of put our faces to the songs we record, so...
Yeah.
I usually kind of keep it abstract and anonymous, but you know,
there's some nice animated videos with your music attached to it.
Yeah. We've done, that's kind of the usual we've done, but this time I think we said we'd have a bash of trying to translate it live and put our faces to it and see if we scare anyone away.
You know, Owen Hayes on recording and directorial duties as well did a fantastic job. Like, what's it like working with him?
Yeah, so we kind of like just dumped him in it, really, like, said, can you come around for an hour or whatever, and kind of set us up, and he was kind of in charge of engineering, like, but we hadn't told him which song we were doing or anything, and he just kind of had to keep on track of everything, like, and make sure everything was running smoothly, while we've just essentially played live for, it could have been 90 minutes, I think, and then afterwards we're like, okay, this is what we want to use, so he was brilliant that way.
We'll talk a little bit more about new material and the session in a wee bit. First of all, let's dial it back a little bit. Annie Joy isn't your first rodeo, obviously. We've kind of done this thing before in the podcast, where when we've spoken to people for the first time, we've kind of gone a little bit into their earliest musical experiences and influences to try and get a sense of kind of what's informed the music that they're now bringing to the city's community.
Whoa, how far do I go back?
As far as you want.
Yeah, well, like, I've played in bands and stuff since I was a teenager, I guess. Like, limited success in most of those ventures, shall we say. But, I suppose I'd always been a kind of a guitar band guy, indie guy, influenced, like, early on by the likes of the Smiths and that kind of stuff, Blur, that kind of crack. And then I suppose I didn't really start writing properly, though, until, I guess, I went to college. Like, I would have been, like, playing in bands as, like, let's say, the singer, guitarist or whatever. I didn't really kind of nail down my own songwriting until maybe late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
And then, I started playing with friends in college and that. We're in a couple of bands. Yeah, I think like the first kind of serious venture into a kind of a band, or a bit of a mess of a band, I suppose, but a great crack all the same, was like Cajole and Bully back, like, I don't know when that was, no, early noughties. And then a few kind of like, I suppose, bedroom projects, like, with other friends. Then after that, maybe going into a bit more kind of electronic stuff when we thought guitars weren't cool anymore. But then moved to America when I came back. Got the Graw back for guitar music, and started a band with our current bassist, Ronan McCann, from Cowboy Waves. And
Painted by Numbers.
And Painted by Numbers, yeah. And my brother, Ronan, who was kind of like venturing into playing drums. So I was like, as a bet, I was like, look, if you know, can commit to learning the drums properly, I'll start a band with you. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. So we started a band called Partisan Crowds, and it was just like a three piece, and we just kind of did everything live, but it was good crack. Didn't get a whole lot down recording, but learned a lot from kind of playing. We played a fair chunk of live gigs with them.
I remember seeing you at one stage.
Yeah. We got around a bit, like, but it was fun because, like, we had a load of songs and none of them were really recorded, and they changed every gig, like, so it was one of those just kind of like for the fun of it bands or whatever. But then that kind of whatever faded out, as things do. And then I think it was around 2016, like, I'd always been a kind of a demo maker, I guess, make a lot of demos in my bedroom and that, and I mean, showing them to people were like, oh, I gotta do something with this, and I was like, no, the game is up, we've moved on. But I think around 2016 I was like looking at a lot of the stuff I had, and was like, there was bands like kind of Parquet Courts that were kind of doing this post-punk revivalist kind of stuff that was coming back into fashion, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna try and get a piece of this. Like, so got back in. That's the kind of
a lucrative market.
Yeah, my bread and butter. So I was like, yeah, like I'm gonna have a go off this again, and kind of that was kind of the start of Annie Joy, really.
In terms of, as you say, taking a post-punk influence and kind of expanding upon it a bit, because there is elements of indie pop evident throughout Annie Joy's music, as much as there is that kind of warm psychedelia that kind of permeates it. Parquet Courts aside, 2016 is also like a very busy time for post-punk in Ireland. The Altered Hours just released their first LP. Girl band are kind of approaching the height of their powers. Kind of, what are your thoughts as these old ideas are coming together, you're coming together with new ones, and kind of, you know, you're bringing these ideas together into this post-punk project? What was it like getting those ideas kind of consolidated and in that space, and then taking them to the people you had been jamming with?
Yeah, so like seeing bands like that, like as you mentioned, Altered Hours and the girl band or whatever, that's just so expressive, so big energy, like as in, we all go to these gigs and we're all blown away by them. And I was kind of like, I was never like, oh, I can do this. It was just more of a, let's explore that genre or whatever and see like what we can come up with ourselves. Now, a lot of, I wouldn't say like all my influences would be post-punk, like a lot of melodic guitar, indie music, like more kind of psych stuff. Like, I look into Deer Hunter, bands like that in America. Like Bradford Cosk is a massive influence. Yeah, like I'm not sure I was ever like trying to emulate anything or ever trying to.
Oh no, I wouldn't like. I wasn't intimating that at all. But it's just along the lines of, you know, it's contemporaneous to the spirit of the times.
Oh, like absolutely. Like, as in, there's definitely an energy. Like when bands like that start coming out of the woodwork, like and getting traction or whatever. So. I guess for us or whatever, or for me, it was like, I kind of was like, I'm gonna write, I'm gonna make demos, I'm gonna get a few people together and see what happens, like, and here we are.
Those early jams where you're kind of finding collaborators, making sure that it comes together, and then whipping those kind of earliest ideas into shape. What was that process like?
Yeah, it was the first few months were kind of tetchy, not like kind of hard to get through, if you get what I mean, because it's like the songs, I suppose, would be demoed kind of by me, and I'd know, I'd be very familiar with them or whatever, but then like bringing them to the lads who wouldn't be as familiar, you kind of want to give them enough space to kind of do with it what they want, like. But I remember at the start, like Ronan was always up for a bassist or whatever. Like it was hard enough to find a drummer. Eventually we got Dara, so then it was me, Dara, and Ronan just trying to get the bedrock down with the songs, and it was great. But it was kind of, I suppose, you're unsure at times. You know, you're not sure where it's going to go or how. Are you going to do the songs justice? Are you going to make them better? Where is it going to go or whatever? But as soon as we got kind of Colm on board, then. Things started to kind of become clearer as to what it was going to sound like. Then we got Dave Nelligan on since. I think actually early on we had...
Dave Nelligan thing.
Yeah, exactly. Dave joined us third time of asking, if I remember. First time he was too busy, second time he wasn't around. And then the third time he eventually... We broke him and he joined us.
Perseverance paying off.
Yeah.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about how the band's debut album came together. But first, we're going to go back to some tunes. Earlier on, we did hear from the Altered Hours as well as the ever-prolific Laurie Shaw. And coming up now on the playlist that you've chosen for us is something of a Cork power couple when it comes to post-punk and psych. First off, you have Elaine Malone's brand new single, My Baby's Dead.
Jesus, Elaine, her stuff is class. She's got such a powerful voice. Really different range as well in the kind of styles that she does, and then this new single she's got out has definitely got flavour of a few Cork influences. You can kind of hear all the
produced by Cahill as well.
Yeah. You can kind of hear that in there, and that's no bad thing. I just think it's a really infectious tune as well. Like it really gets in your your ear and you're kind of humming along to it as well. Like, so, yeah, she's deadly.
You also have arthritis with Let's Touch.
Oh, yeah. So, Colm, actually, the guitarist in our band, did a video for that song. And he kind of got me interested in the stuff he does. I think he's amazing. Like, I was actually showing some of his stuff to other lads, and they were like, this is just so interesting and creative and odd. And he's like, I've seen him live, he's got serious swag on stage, doesn't he?
He has. Arthur Pawsey's something.
Yeah, like, he's a badass. Yeah, I know, he's a really interesting artist, and that song is class as well. It really reminds me of like Outkast or something, do you know? It's like, he was really kind of like, it's almost hip-hoppy or soul-y or whatever he's doing, like, but it's really, really cool.
And only he could kind of reach into space to pull down that kind of influence, yeah, and kind of, yeah, transmute it to the Cork, yeah, post-punk psych thing. We'll hear from him in a little bit, but first, this is Elaine Malone with My Baby's Dead here on Red on Red.
Stay out of there. Thank you! The Loft, Casey's Furniture Shop, and the River Lee. Not the hotel, the river.
Arthritis with Let's Touch here on Red on Red, still joined in studio by Oisin Dunin, CEO, founder,
CEO.
Magnate
nice.
Of Cork Psych Indie Post-Punkers, Annie Joy. And before the jump, we were talking a little bit about the earliest kind of process regarding Annie Joy and how things come together. By the time late 2017, early 2018 rolls around, the decision is made to go to a debut album with Cycles. Maybe talk to us a little bit about kind of the earliest processes of deciding on, you know, a debut release to the scale of Cycles, how songs are kind of collated and kind of refined, you know, for final selection, and really just kind of the pre-production process for the record.
Yeah, so being in, like, I think most people have been in bands, like, where it's kind of it's a democracy or whatever, and people are kind of deciding, like, where to go. And, like, sometimes that works amazing, and if it does, you're very lucky that you can get a group of people together with similar ideas and kind of push it forward together.
Yeah.
But usually that's quite slow. Well, I found it to be quite slow. I can kind of get stuck on ideas and whatever. But for this project or whatever, it was pretty much I was in the driving seat, so, it's faster, decisions get made quicker. Opinions are less important in the recording process anyway. And then, like, all kind of the democracy happens then in the kind of live playing. So putting, like, songs together for an album was kind of a crazy decision in one way, but it was kind of the easiest decision as well, in that, like, the songs kind of worked together as a family. There was a story kind of running through. It was actually to the point where it got to a certain amount of music where it was like, oh, this is a mini album, or this is an LP, or this is a big EP or whatever. Like, so we just decided straight to just, like, go all out and say, look, let's just do it.
In terms of the story that runs through, I suppose, the running order of the LP, maybe take us into as much or as little detail as you'd like to, but certainly, like, some of the themes, specifically modernity, communication, etc. Maybe talk to us a little bit about what influenced those themes to manifest themselves on the record.
Yeah, I suppose it's more of a theme than a story or whatever, but there's just kind of, like, similar themes run through songs, themes of distraction, memory, the kind of cyclical nature of pretty much everything, like the creative process, your day-to-day routine, that kind of stuff. Just kind of, I think, like, for a project, if you can kind of tie things down or kind of recognize when a song is playing into this, that theme or that idea or whatever, the record or whatever gets done kind of quicker, do you know what I mean?
Once the songs are arranged and everything's ready to go, take us through the recording process, because, I mean, like, the end result is absolutely beautiful and kind of comes through with all of the intentions and hallmarks that you seem to have in mind. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, just the process of putting it down to tape.
So I actually record everything myself, which is very lonely and crazy. But it kind of works, I suppose, in terms of production.
Any help from super producer Ronan?
More opinions than anything else, because, like, we work together on a lot of stuff, and it's great. We both have our own ways of doing things, and I think for both of us it's great to just give each other feedback and ideas rather than kind of taking over control of things.
Yeah.
He definitely helped in kind of pointing out bugs before I was going to master and stuff like that, which is excellent. Like, and he's brilliant with EQ and stuff like that. So having his kind of genius for that was really handy. But if you give someone a project or whatever and you say, what do you think of this? they could come back to you with, you know, a million ideas or whatever. Like, so you're,
yeah.
It's almost like you don't want to show someone the complete thing in case it changes too much or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, if you're happy with it or if it's in the ballpark. So, yeah, what, like, the recording process for me was like, it kind of just made a studio at home, as you do. And kind of had a batch of demo songs and then just kind of built them back up from scratch once we decided which ones were going on the album. And yeah, that was it. It was laborious and tough and lonely, and people thought it was absolutely crazy, and they were right.
To say nothing of the mixing and mastering process then thereafter.
Well, Jesus, yeah, that's just a whole other, like, ball game. You think you've got something mixed, and then when it starts coming back from master, you start noticing more, don't you? And then it's just like you're into another few weeks per song. But yeah, that's the nature of the game.
Once the uphill struggle is done with Cycles, it released and did really quite well in terms of critical reception from the Irish blogosphere and media, as well as a group of accompanying shows. Kind of, what are your thoughts on how it was received and, I suppose, the gigs that followed?
Well, the reception was great. The launch was amazing. It's like still to this day the best gig I'd say most of us have played. It was just awesome. I guess people were unsure of us. We're kind of outliers. We kind of came out of nowhere. And with this like finished product, and didn't really go through the channels of
singles,
EP, all that. Yeah. I think that might have been because we'd done that before, and I suppose there's no harm, I suppose, in putting out a bigger release, you know, if it's there to go.
Yeah.
People weren't sure what to make of us, but generally the reception was good. It's funny now that you're seeing, I think, a lot of, even like, there's a lot more post-punk kind of stuff happening, or kind of those kind of bands kind of doing well now, which is kind of weird to watch, like, or whatever. But
well, as that kind of movement puts down roots, naturally there are managers that are quick to identify a publishing gap.
Yeah.
The international success of the genre, the likes of Idols and Sleaford Mods, it kind of provides a handy publishing gap for, you know, certain quarters of the music industry to see something. And, you know, I suppose a rising tide lifts all boats, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we'll see about that. Mm. But it's definitely thriving anyway, kind of.
It's thriving where it needs to thrive, and that's a DIY scene for it, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But first, we're going to head back to some more tunes. You've chosen for us possibly one of the exemplars of the DIY mindset in Irish music over the last 10 to 15 years, with O Emperor and Girl, taken from their final album, Jason, which in the band's death is also their only Choice Music Prize winning album. Talk to us a little bit, I suppose, about that particular cosmic happening.
Yeah, well, I actually, like, that album, I think, is just absolutely stunning. Like, it's got everything. It's kind of like a band that know how to do everything and not caring. Do you know what I mean? And just like, we're just going to do it all. It's got so much fun in it. And then, like, this song, Girl, I think, is just absolutely beautiful. Like,
it's gorgeous.
It's a stunning tune. Like, you know, people ask you, like, oh, if you could have written a song or whatever, like, that's definitely one of them. It's just an absolute stunner. When the pianos kick in, like, later on in the song, it's just, like, it's melting, like. But
you're not the first person now that said, if I could write a tune, it would be something like O Emperor came out with as well.
Yeah, no, like, that album, like, I always like their stuff or whatever, but when that album came out first, I was like, this is it. This is what they've been building towards their whole time. Like, this is what they're about. And
I remember being blown away by Make It Rain.
Yeah, like, as in, if you asked me to put together a few songs there, like, I could have put three or four off that album alone. Like,
a couple of people have tried.
Yeah. Like, I'd say everyone just wants to either open with or close with Make It Rain, because it's just such a tune. Like,
it is a bop. Yeah. You also have God Alone with Dagda, another recording in which Ronan McCann had a hand.
Oh, yeah, very, very different to the previous song. Our bassist Ronan has recorded a lot of God Alone stuff, and they're just a force. Like, I've seen them a few times live, and I'm like, wow, like, if you could bottle whatever energy this is, like, they'd be very wealthy young men. Like, good luck to them, they're insane. And, like, what are they, doing their leaving cert or something?
I think Jake just finished his leaving cert now.
Yeah, no, they're incredible, and I'm sure they'll go on to, like, massive things, and, yeah, best of luck to them. They're a serious operation.
They really are, and we'll hear from them momentarily, but first, this is O Emperor with Girl here on Red on Red. Thank you. God Alone with Dagda, taken from their Paul Namrone LP, available now across all streaming services. This is Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast, and we're still joined in studio by Oisín Dineen, publishing magnate of the Cork post-punk scene and frontman of Annie Joy. Before the jump, we were talking a little bit about the creative process behind your debut LP, Cycles, available now also across all the streaming services, as well as on vinyl, actually. I'm clutching a copy in my hands, available from the fine vinyl vendors of this city, including Plugged and Bunker, yeah?
Yep.
As well as available for order online from anniejoy.bandcamp.com.
Exactly.
But it wouldn't be too much longer before you found your music back on wax again. In 2018, you were approached by the committee putting together the second edition of the Litany of Failures compilation. The first of which was a four-way split cassette between different DIY bands from around the country, including the likes of Shrug Life. For Volume 2, on which Annie Joy played after being approached by Stevie from The Thin Air to be a part of, the compilation, which I'm holding in my hands right now and is available as a 2LP from Plugged Records, as well as other places, contains four sides of post-punk, shoegaze, DIY pop.
DIY is a main thing with that one, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I think when they were picking the bands, it was really guys with the DIY ethic going on that they favoured or whatever. Mm. So it's kind of showcasing, I guess, like what is going on across the country with DIY bands.
What was the process of working with the lads as they were putting it together?
Brilliant. Like, they were almost like encouraging you to put something out that was like unpolished, do you know what I mean? Just kind of gritty, like a demo or something that was, it had to be unreleased, obviously. Mm. So anything that you might have been working on, even a live session or whatever, would have done. But I think most bands put forward something a bit more polished than a kind of a phone recording anyway.
Did Sucker come together kind of bang bang, or was it something you had in the
I think I kind of, once the lads contacted me, I kind of like tested myself, just kind of starting from scratch. Like, email came in, can you do a song for this? And I was like, alright, and we kind of just built it up from there. Kind of came out of nowhere. Yeah, no, it's good. Turned out good.
The corresponding sets of shows happened at different cities, you know, according to the different hometowns of the bands. In total, there was four or five different, like, big DIY gigs under the A Litany of Failures name, including a big enough old show at the Roundy. Featuring yourselves. Maybe talk to us a little bit about that gig and how that all came together and what that kind of meeting of the minds was like.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was like, it was us, the Sunshine Factory, and who were also on the record, and a band called Nerves, who were on it too. And it was just one of those cool nights upstairs in the Roundy, like just like-minded people in there watching some pretty gritty guitar music, or kind of indie bands, DIY kind of sound. And yeah, it was deadly. Sold a few records, and yeah, there was definitely a sense of community kind of, I suppose, brought together through that record. Like, so it was pretty cool.
It's lovely that you mentioned community, because that is what's happening right around the country when you look at DIY musical efforts. But it's also an easy seg to ask my next question. You kind of look at the slew of related sounds around the country now, in that respect, to kind of fall under the rough DIY umbrella, so to speak. What's your take on where shambling DIY, you know, reverb-drenched guitar music is going and where it goes next?
I don't think it ever dies, does it? It just stays there, it just keeps going. New, younger people come up and they bring something interesting to it. There's always going to be like slacker rock, indie rock, DIY, whatever you want to call it, post-punk. And there's always, like, on that record there, with the 18 tracks in it, I mean, like, there isn't one sound going through it. It's just people being as creative as they can with whatever tools they have to hand. And like the future of it is the same, if that makes any sense, isn't it? It just always exists. It's always important. And like there's music, there's success, there's all that. Like, it's just so foreign to the point of why you make music. Like, you make music because you need to express yourself, and your friends need to express themselves, and your community needs to have a place to express itself, and that's why that music exists.
Self-expression is success, if you ask me.
There you go.
Like, that's it's
a more succinct way of putting it.
And it's that kind of mentality of which A Litany of Failures, Volume 2, available now on double LP from Plugged Records, is a celebration of. After the release of A Litany of Failures, you then had a pair of new singles, The Fall and The Sea, released toward the end of last year and early this. Maybe talk to us a little bit about what was different about putting these tunes together this time around. The recording process, the writing process, with the benefit of having had an album kind of put together and put out, and what kind of important, if any, it is of the band's future direction.
Yeah, no, so, like, as you say, after having, like, one release or whatever, like, the album or Cycles, the album was kind of, a lot of the work there was trying to get a sound of, one sound of a band. And once we kind of had that sorted or whatever, the next releases you can be a bit more experimental. So we put out Sucker was definitely a kind of a louder than anything that would have been on the album or whatever. And then The Fall was another kind of experiment in kind of almost more poppy sounding kind of psych iterations of the sound. And then more recently we did a song called The Sea, and again it's just each song that we're kind of putting out is a kind of a, I suppose, a development of kind of experimentation. It's kind of trying to see how much you can kind of build up these ideas or whatever. So they're definitely an indication as to what's next. I've got sitting on a good few demos now at the moment, like, so the sound of those will definitely be informed with the last couple of releases. So, and that's going to be a removal from the album. So,
early on, we were talking about that session track that came out a couple of weeks ago. You said yourself that you'd kind of tape maybe about 90 minutes or so of material. Will any of that be kind of resurfacing in the run up?
Yeah. So the aim there was to do a live EP, and then we kind of focused on the song Knife. Because, like, usually the process is I'll have a demo, I'll bring it to the lads, and then we'll get it roughly like the demo with their own flavour put in there. But Knife was really kind of, I think it was, you could safely say it was pretty much written by the band. I did a fairly rough demo, and then we played with it so much live, like, that it kind of turned into something else. Like, there's a kind of a pop song at the start, there's a breakdown, and there's, like, a 3-minute outro that's longer than the first two parts of the song. So that very much is the kind of thing that happens when you're playing in a room with people and you're just kind of in the groove of it or whatever, and it just kind of elongates. We did a live session for that. We did the video for it, and there was definitely a couple of other interesting takes on other songs. Like, we did a different version of Avert Your Eyes, which was the first single we put out on the album. We kind of did a kind of a kraut rock version of that. It's kind of totally, it sounds completely different to the original song, but it's just cool to play. So the aim with that is to kind of have a live EP coming out fairly soon, because it's pretty much ready to go.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what the future has in store for Annie Joy. But first, you mentioned getting into grooves and kind of elongating ideas. The next two bands you've chosen for your playlist exemplify the very best of those creative impulses. You've got Fixity with Worldline, taken from the No Man Can Tell LP.
Fixity, like Dan Walsh, he's just on another level, really, in terms of improvisation and experimentation. And, yeah, I've seen that song a couple of times live and people just lose their rag to it. Like, it's just a great, there's nothing like it, really, is there? It's just chaos tamed.
That use of phrasing, that dour post-punk repetition involved, but you're like, when you talk about people losing their shit when they hear it live. If I live to be 100, I'll never ever forget last year at the Jazz, their big gig at the Poor Relation. And we're at stage right, like, do you know where the stairs up is to the stage in the Pura, mm-hmm. little stairs? And we were by some kids that had come down for the Jazz from BIM, the music college up in Dublin. And they were talking about it and they were comparing notes and, oh, we went to the Jazz and, you know, all this isn't a grand. And they were watching Fixity kind of unfail behind them, and, like, their jaws slowly went more slack as the first couple of songs went on. Like, is this dude gigging here constantly? Like, is he gigging here, like, couple of weeks? Like, this is happening here constantly, and we're not hearing about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And I remember when they kicked into Worldline,
mm-hmm.
just that familiar phrasing that we'd heard a couple of times at gigs. And the gobsmacking on one of their faces in particular, the boys literally grabbing each other by the shoulders and shaking each other by the shoulders like they found some hidden elixir of life. Like,
there was a serious energy in the room that night, though, because it was absolutely thronged. Like,
it was. It was the way, I suppose, our scene or our community might have finished the jazz. And it was the end of the jazz for a lot of people, mm-hmm. obviously, because it was a Sunday. But, like, that caps it off.
Yeah, no, it was awesome.
You also have the Bonk with Monologue, more semi-improv action from the kind of core Cork psychedelic rock scene.
Yeah, are they Cork? There's enough of them from Cork playing there, right?
Yeah.
This song, Monologue, I think it's just really... it kind of reminds me of something off Low by Bowie or something. It's just a lovely sense. It's an instrumental tune. They're like from the same kind of ilk as O Emperor and all that crew. Like, the experimental stuff they do is just so engaging, interesting, like thrilling to hear. And yeah, I just love it. Like,
we'll hear from them momentarily, but first, this is Fixity with World Line here on Red on Red. We'll be right back. The Bonk with Monologue here on Red on Red. And just before we finish up this episode of the podcast, Oisín, you've got a fairly busy festival slate ahead of you. You're playing Arcadian Field. There's a couple of things happening around the place. Bring us into what you're up to for the summer before this kind of live EP becomes a thing.
Yeah, so as you said, we're playing Arcadian Field in Dundalk on the 4th of August, which is the Sunday, I think. We're gearing up to that. We've just recorded a live EP, so we're finishing mixing that. And we've got a few other songs that need to be finished to put out, hopefully by the end of the summer. So that's kind of where we're at, kind of busy recording at the moment. So, yeah.
Any downtime to get into gigs? Anything that you kind of want to get to yourself?
I'm glad that I'm not going to be there on Friday night for Just Mustard in Cypress Avenue.
Same.
I have to work, which I'm very upset about.
I thought it was the Sunday for some odd reason.
It's Friday, right?
Yeah, but I won't be able to make it for various reasons on
Friday.
Yeah, that was
the one that was majorly on my radar anyway. But yeah, like, what else am I going to? Yeah, that was one of the more recent ones anyway that I'm pretty pissed about. Went to see the lads in the Donnelly tribute thing last week. That was pretty cool.
That was cool.
Yeah.
It was a really lovely moment. The crowd beckoning Smelly to stage to play the stuff that was on Caught at the Campus. It was a fantastic moment to see, and that kind of...
He really hits the drums as well, like, doesn't he? There's a very noticeable difference between him and Ian, the lad who plays with them regularly.
Mm.
It was cool, really cool, actually.
They were really on top of their stuff. And we'll hear from Nun Attacks actually momentarily, but before we do, I suppose any last kind of shout-outs or any plugs, etc. you want to get in?
The video we shot last week is up on YouTube. The song's called Knife. If you want to give that a look and a share, if you're into sharing.
I'm sure there are a great many people that are into sharing, and they can find any joy across their social media as well as up on YouTube and the streaming services. That about wraps things up for this week's episode of Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast from Red FM and redextra.ie. Thank you very much to Oisín Dineen of Annie Joy for joining us this episode.
Thanks a million, Mike.
And thank you very much for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please take the time to subscribe and leave a review on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, as well as other podcasting platforms. Please be sure to give us a positive review across your iTunes and Google Podcasts. Every good review helps us reach a wider audience and in turn spread the word of DIY music in Cork City. Subscribe to us in Spotify and make sure that you're among the first to get the podcast in your feed every Wednesday, or whatever podcasting app that you're having yourself. Share this on your social media and make sure to check out the artists featured online or at an upcoming gig. And if you'd like more Irish tunes, please be sure to listen in to Green on Red on Sunday nights with Alan O'Donovan for the best of all that is Irish on Cork's Red FM 104 to 106. We're talking a little bit about Nun Attacks, and no sooner than we talk about the Donnelly show than Rika Sunfair, the last track of their side of the Caught at the Campus compilation, which is also now available across streaming services. So if you haven't had the chance to experience a bit of DIY Cork history, please take the time to do so when you can. The lads really knocked Rika Sunfair out of the park twice. They came back and did
it a second time
after a call for an encore. What a moment.
Well, it's just a beast of a tune, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And just like the air of it, you know, it sounds like when it was made. Do you know what I mean? I just absolutely love it. The singer, Tom from... Is it Tom? From Trumpets of Jericho. He was amazing.
He nailed the Donnelly yodel.
Yeah. No, they were just brilliant to watch. Like, Cypress Avenue is so big now, I wasn't sure what the crowd was, but it was packed, right? It was awesome.
On a Tuesday night as well?
Yeah.
On a school night, babysitters kind of at a premium.
Yeah, no, they did very well.
The point that I loved as well was Liam Heffernan getting to do his spiel from the start of the Mean Features track as well.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking off the microphones earlier about the lads wanting to do it again and to have the passion for it as well, and it was amazing to kind of see that settle in across the room as the night kind of wore on as well.
Yeah, no, it's really encouraging to see people like just caring so much about it. You can see, like, when you're watching them, that they're just absolutely loving it. They're all completely in it, like, so and still all just have absolute love for Donnelly and love for the music and love for, you know, playing it for people who are interested. Like, it's just a really cool thing.
and it's proof that a love for independent music and weirdo tunes in Cork City can be a lifelong thing. And on that note, we're going to take you to the Call of the Campus recording of Rika Sunfair by None Attacks. This has been Red on Red, and we'll talk to you next week.
Red on Red.